This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Rolling into the weekend on a Friday. Welcome to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we discuss the off season. We'll also discuss playoffs, even though the Bills are not part of it anymore. We got the AFC and NFC title games coming up this weekend. We'll be discussing that in hour number two with the one and only Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films. And we also have, as we do every Friday, the OBL Friday fan mailbag. Any question under the sun on the Bills or the NFL at large, fire away. We will do our best to answer them with coherent and competent responses.
No guarantees.
No, yeah, that's right. Well, we don't know what we're being asked.
Results so may
how
vary.
How can we guarantee?
Results may vary.
Yes, results may vary. Batteries not included. Yeah. So here we are, the Friday before the conference championship games. I think it's been interesting, Steve, how much Patrick Mahomes' ankle can move the point spread line. Because they went from, I think, an initial favorite to then a 1 or 2 point underdog, right. And now it's swung back in favor of the Chiefs, where they're like a 1.5 point favorite again. All because Patrick Mahomes went from, oh, what's the ankle going to do, to not wearing an ankle brace to his press conference,
hopping
to practicing
down.
Fully in practice.
Yeah.
And we just got word that the Bengals, again, are going to be without starting right guard Alex Kappa and left tackle Jonah Williams. They have been ruled out
and
of Sunday's
Collins.
Game. Well, yeah, he was out for the season. We knew that. But, yeah, those two guys at least had a shred of hope that they could play, but that is not going to be the case. So
we'll see. All these, you talk into the competition and the questions in each game, and you kind of think you talk yourself into either team winning, and I get all that. I think the Chiefs, and I said this last week, though, and I was completely wrong. I think the Chiefs are going to lump these guys up. You don't talk about another, if you haven't heard, the Bengals are referring to Arrowhead Stadium as Burrowhead Stadium because he's, you know, 3-0 against the Chiefs, you know, and he's, Burrow is undefeated against Mahomes in his career. If I'm the Chiefs, man, I am hot about that. I am hot.
Yeah.
And we saw the Bengals are, you know, they don't lack confidence in talking about how good they are and how good they're going to be and how bad you are and what they're going to do to you. They have no qualms about talking.
Well,
before the game,
the Chiefs are not immune to falling into that trap either, because their linebacker Willie Gay was asked this week what impressed him about the Bengals' offense, and he said nothing. That was his answer. Nothing.
That I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. And Zach Taylor said it himself last week. He scours the internet looking for any shred of bulletin board material he can find.
Disrespect.
That one is going to be in all caps, boldface, and 48 font on the on the Bengals bulletin board this week.
It is. If you have a team
that's
that,
a gift.
If you have a team that is struggling or whatever, you need to fire them up or whatever. Disrespect is the elixir that fixes that. When you disrespect guys and their professionalism, their team, their accomplishment, whatever, challenge their manhood, take your pick. It is the absolute magic elixir for getting a team angry enough to play football. Not
well,
that you have to be angry to play football.
You shouldn't have to get up to play this one.
But I mean, still, you want to play your best. And when you play your best, it's when you are highly motivated with some animosity towards your opponent.
Right.
And, yeah, that – when you say nothing about their offense impresses you –
what impresses you about their offense?
Nothing.
Nothing.
That is an absolute, in my mind, absolute mental mistake. Not much worse than the Bengals disrespecting not only, you know, Burrowhead Stadium. To me, that's – because now you're disrespecting the fans too.
Yeah, and this tends to happen, and it'll probably happen even more going into the Super Bowl because it's 2 weeks for a war of words. But
yeah.
You'd like to think that Like, there were a couple of Chiefs players that were trying, that were, you know, the media's trying to bait them into saying something remotely controversial. And two or three of them just wisely said, we're just going to let our play do the talking. And I was like, yeah, you know, where has that been? Because I don't know what it is, why it's so hard for guys to keep their mouth shut. If you don't want to back down and sound meek with an answer, just say no comment.
Right.
Just say, yeah, I'm not commenting on that. Next question.
And I'll say this.
It's a lot better than giving them motivation, because this does do that.
Last year, the Chiefs, I mean, it's, you know, you talk about, you know, they were 3-0, Burrow's 3-0 against Mahomes. The Chiefs were up 21-3 in that game last year. 21-3 with 5 minutes to go in the second.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, Cincinnati shut them out in the second half.
The Chiefs got a field goal to tie it up in the fourth quarter no time.
Oh, that's right, because it went to overtime. Never mind.
So, yeah, that happened.
Held them to a field goal in the second half.
I'm like, might, you know.
The over-under is only 48 for that game. Which I think most people would consider low, knowing the offensive firepower of those two teams. You know what I mean? So maybe some of the unknown about Mahomes' maneuverability is a part of that number. But it's interesting. They, you know, 48 points, you're talking.
There must be factors that we're not aware of that are
26,
playing into that.
26, 23,
like when
somewhere
they get
in there.
Late in the year and the weather and the coldness keeps the scoring down, I guess, maybe.
I didn't even look. Did you see what the weather's supposed to be in Kansas City? I did not.
It's going
to
be cold, I'll say that. Well, I grew up out there. It's cold. It won't be. I doubt that they'll get precipitation in any form.
Let's see what it says for Sunday. Woo! Sunny! High of 25. Low of 14.
It's cold. And when it's clear and sunny and cold like that, it's colder than usual because the clouds keep the heat in.
Don't believe that it's 25. It's colder.
It's colder. It's going to feel colder, I'm telling you.
Okay.
It's going to be bad.
I just don't want it to be windy because I want to see two offenses at their best. As much as I don't want to watch the Bengals play these days, I'm still a little sore. So that is what it is. The NFC game, I think, is going to be a slobber knocker. Those two defenses, now I wouldn't be surprised if that's a low-scoring game because the quality of those two defenses between Philadelphia's league-leading pass rush of 70 sacks this year and then the Niners' front seven, which just shuts it all down. I don't know if both teams get to the 20s. I think the winner of that game is probably winning 23-17.
I'm kind of with you. I think that game's going to be a slugfest.
Slobber knocker.
It's all and as we've been talking about with the Bills, I think it's all at the line of scrimmage. You know,
I worry about Brock Purdy in that one. I don't know.
I don't worry about Brock Purdy because Shanahan is not going to put that guy at risk because he's got to have him to win this game.
Well, you better have max protection.
So they're going to
play.
I think they're going to run at that team. You don't want to drop back and let them rush the passer. They're going to have 75 sacks. So I think you run right at them and just play action them to death and try and get small. Just get the ball out of Purdy's hands into those guys and, you know, 4 to 7 yards every play is an absolutely stellar day. You know, don't look for the big play. Just move it.
That is the one area where Philly is average, 16th against the run, 24th in average yards per carry against.
So, I think San Francisco is really going to test that. And the thing too is, if it is like we think it's going to be, where it's going to be a low score, that'll never take the run game out of it. You know what I mean? They'll never get one dimensional.
Right.
If the game is close, I think they'll continue to just grind it, and they just wear them out, wear guys out. So I agree with you. I think the NFC game is going to look much and feel much different than the AFC game.
The NFC game is first. The AFC game is second. So it is going to be cold in Kansas City. So by the time they kick that thing off around 6 o'clock, it's going to be about 18 degrees. That's going to be chilly.
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 Yeah.
Let's go around the NFL, which is presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. Former Jets offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur has landed in Los Angeles, where he will be the OC of the LA Rams. His brother, David LaFleur, used to work for Sean McVay. Now Mike LaFleur is going to work for Sean McVay in LA with the Rams. We saw late yesterday during our show Frank Reich, the new head coach of the Carolina Panthers. And I'm happy for Frank. And, you know, that team ran the ball really well down the stretch last year. And Frank knows how to draw up a run game. So I'm interested to see what that's going to look like next year. Of course, they have the quarterback question to answer, because I believe Sam Darnold is a free agent, even though a lot of people down there would tell you he actually played pretty well down the stretch. I don't know if he's their long-term answer. So does Frank get a quarterback in the draft for once after trying to work with veteran after veteran the last couple of years?
Or is he
in
Indy? Is he going to have yet another starting quarterback veteran like Derek Carr or somebody like that and parachute in again?
Yeah, Sam Darnold is a free agent. That is confirmed.
And we had who was it we had on this week on the show that said, you know, don't
– Doug Farrar?
Yeah, Doug Farrar said, you know, don't kid yourself after he studied the film. He said, Sam Darnold did not play as badly as people would make it out. But I'll say this, the guy that's their head coach now in Carolina knows what he's looking at when he sees a good quarterback or a bad quarterback. The question is, what's the guy got left in his tank and what can his ceiling be? So – I think it's really interesting. I'm happy for my friend Frank. I thought he deserved it. I thought what happened in Indianapolis was
travesty.
Yes. I thought it was a big mistake on a number of levels. So, and there's, you know, so we'll see who comes out on top this, you know, as this thing shakes out over the next year or two or 2 or 3 years, whether Frank's a good head coach or the Colts owner is a good owner. We'll see. I know who I'm betting on.
Speculation continues to swirl in New York, where the Jets are desperate for a veteran quarterback. And the speculation surrounds one Aaron Rodgers. The 39-year-old is taking his time to make his decision. And, of course, the Packers have a hand in that as well as to whether he's going to continue his career with the only team he has ever played for in Green Bay, or if he will agree to a trade. So the New York tabloids are having a field day with this, so much so that one reporter ran down Sauce Gardner and asked him, would you mind if the Jets traded for Aaron Rodgers? And Sauce said, no, I wouldn't mind. If you were a defensive player on the Jets, would you mind after watching that quarterback abomination of execution this past season?
The problem is it might take Sauce Gardner. They might have to trade Sauce Gardner.
They're probably looking for draft.
No, you can trade for Aaron Rodgers. Oh, you're trading me?
Yeah.
And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a Yeah.
A frontline player.
You're not going to get Aaron Rodgers for a seventh.
right.
You know?
Right.
And Green Bay is sitting over there going, we're not letting him go for that.
You're not getting him for a song.
All right. So, yeah, all that's on the table, and it'll be interesting to see what the Jets want to do. You certainly don't want to cripple his ability to be successful if you trade everything away to get him. Then he comes over and you're bereft of all the draft picks you just took that were so much complimented by the rest of the league, and you and me even. They drafted great. So what are they going to do, give Breece Hall to the Packers and Sauce Gardner?
Yeah, well, I don't think it would. I don't think they would do that. Those are two cornerstone players on their offense and defense, respectively. The Jets have some work to do on their offensive line because even three or four of the guys that they had playing for them on the offensive line are free agents upcoming. George Fant, Connor McGovern, Dan Feeney was a backup. Nate Herbig started for them. He was a guard. Cedric Abueyi was a guy they picked up late in the year to fill because they didn't have anybody healthy. What's going on with Mekhi Becton? Is that guy ever going to play again? So they got some fixing to do on the offensive line. And Aaron Rodgers, say what you will about him, the guy does his homework. He's going to look at that Jets roster and go, you're going to have an offensive line by August?
Right.
Because I'm not going there to get my head handed to me.
Right.
So
right now, the Jets would be, if the Jets traded for him, they've got the 13th pick. Green Bay's got the 15th pick. So they would pick 13 and 15 in Green Bay if they traded the Jets and the this year's one, plus whatever else you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, the Jets, I mean, think about it. The Jets could say, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll trade you this year's 13th pick and Mekhi Becton, because he's a really good player, but he hasn't played for us. He's been a little injured, but he's a great, he's a, you know, gifted player. And let's go.
I don't think they're doing that.
Right? Would you do that?
Can't even control his weight. Forget about his
injury. Would you do the New York Jets? Would you do the 13th pick and next, and what, another one next year or another, a two next year? Or would they want it more urgent? Would they want it one and a two this year?
Yeah, hard to say. Yeah.
I don't even know what the going
rate. I don't know what the compensation is for a 39-year-old quarterback who's a two-time MVP and is only a year removed from his last MVP award. So, the guy can still throw. And he's
– right.
I've said it before. He's the most accurate quarterback I've ever seen in my life.
The 13th pick would be equal to – it's not even – half of what the number one overall pick would be. So if you've got, you know, if you're going by the value chart, you'd have to give that and probably the Jet 2, which is 43 overall, and then probably maybe a 3 next year or something. You spread it out if you're the Jets, you know what I mean? You can't give them everything this year. It's not like, you don't want to do a Ricky Williams trade where you trade every single draft pick of your draft for one player, right?
Right.
Or a Herschel Walker trade. That's interesting. I just still don't think it happens. I think Aaron likes the attention in the offseason. Whether he intends to really take advantage of it and leave. It happened before. Brett Favre ended up with the Jets at the end of his career. The same thing could happen with Aaron. He could end up someplace else. What have I said about the great ones, Brownie? It rarely ends well.
Right.
It rarely ends well.
And the Jets have been down this road before. They did it with Brett Favre.
Right. That's why, yeah, that's what I just said. Yeah, he went to the Jets.
Well, he went to the Vikings first, but yes, then the Jets. Yeah. And he was only there for 1 year, and it was
Right. Well, he's...
It was meh.
If that. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers can still go, though. You got to... I think if you're the Jets, you don't want to waste any more time. I mean, the guy's old now. And you got to find out if he's interested in it. The Packers say he's on the table. They'd be willing to do it if Aaron wants to. It's a big cap number. May have to rework some numbers, but if the Jets are in on this, of course they will. There's some, you know, and it may not be the Jets. It may be Carolina, or it might be Miami, somebody like that. Miami has been known to pick up the phone a little too early in the conversation. With the collusion or the tampering that they were accused of and fined for. I don't know. Aaron Rodgers to the Jets? I'm sorry. I don't think so. I just can't see it.
What is your biggest stumbling block with it? What do you think? What is the biggest stumbling block for you? Aaron saying no?
Yeah. I don't think Aaron wants to go anywhere. I think he wants to. He saw how it went. I think
he saw how it went for Russell Wilson in Denver?
And Brett Favre.
Well, true. They did get to an NFC title game in Minnesota with him, and they lost to the Saints, who won the Super Bowl that year.
Okay.
I'm just saying, like, it didn't work for Russell Wilson last year. That's for sure.
Here's the thing. Aaron, I keep calling him, he's this wild donkey that doesn't, he has, like, he's not married. He's a single guy. He's like, he travels and goes wherever he wants, does whatever he wants, and not held accountable by anybody. He doesn't owe anybody anything. He just runs his own life. And so I think he does this in the off season just because he can. And there's nobody to say, hey, what are you doing? Make a decision. Let's go. Because you got dozens and dozens of really important and very wonderful people waiting on your decision. You know, you got your teammates. in Green Bay, the front office in Green Bay, who you've got a probably a lifelong relationship with some individuals in that organization, and you've got other people in other organizations that can't move ahead. Nobody's there telling him, going, "Hey, bro, let's go. Tell him what's going to happen here." And the long and I here's the thing. He's got to be smart enough to know that the more forewarning he gives teams, the better it is for him. So if he's going to leave, he wants that other team to know he's coming way before he, you know what I mean, as early in the process as he can so they can start helping him.
Yeah.
So I just think that's not going to happen. I think it's a rerun.
What if it does happen? Are the Jets suddenly right there with the Bills? Pretty close.
It gives me pause. I'll say that.
They're right there.
It gives me it makes me pause for a moment.
If they get him, I think they're right there. Because he will raise the level of that receiving core, and they've used high draft choices to improve it. Mm-hmm. You've got Elijah Moore, who was a second-round pick out of Ole Miss. He's an emerging slot receiving target. Garrett Wilson, I think, is going to be a proven number one wideout by next year. Had a really strong rookie season this year.
Oh, yeah.
And they still have Corey Davis, who's, you know, okay as a three, I guess. He's not great. He's okay as a three.
Breece Hall's coming back.
He gets nicked every year. Breece Hall's back in the backfield. You have Michael Carter as your pass-catching back. You've got Ty Conklin, who's a young tight end who's on the ascent. You got to fix the offensive line. That's the issue for them. They got to fix that offensive line. They've tried seven ways to Sunday, and none of it's worked, either due to injury or guys just not panning out.
How about this, Brownie? So you're the Jets, and really you need to draft some O-linemen, and they got to come in and play. Would you be more apt to say, how about this, Green Bay? Instead of giving you two twos or two ones, we'll give you two ones and a two if you don't get your first one until next year, not this year. We need our first rounder this year. You know what I mean?
Right. I think that's the dilemma for them because they still know they have some building to do on the offensive side of the ball.
I can certainly free agent that.
I think veteran quarterback is firmly on their radar. Whether or not it's Rodgers, I think, is
because of
the compensation you'd have to give up to land him. That's the issue. You know, if you can get another veteran quarterback just as a free agent or something like that, well, then it's a different story. You know, now you just have to pay the money. You're not giving up assets or draft capital or players that are on your roster.
Right. Yeah, that's I think it'd be really intriguing and a lot of fun if Aaron Rodgers was on a different team next year, no matter who it is, whether it's the Jets, Atlanta, Miami, Carolina, whatever, Houston. I think it's really intriguing. Certainly, it probably won't be Carolina because they want to put him outside the conference. So it'll be like Miami, Houston, New York Jets. Yeah. So I don't know. Wonder what New England would give up to get Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, they could give up all their draft picks because they don't know how to use them anyway.
Right. It's a wash.
Yeah. I still
– Cole Strange.
Do you know what? It still blows my mind.
I can't believe it.
Still blows my mind that the Patriots got Randy Moss from the Raiders for a fourth-round draft choice. Is that criminal?
They got what?
Randy Moss in a trade with the Raiders for a fourth-round draft choice. Because Randy Moss went to the Raiders, and he stunk up the joint. Like, nothing happened. What is it about the Raiders and receivers going there? I mean, Devontae Adams put up numbers this year, so I guess that one worked. But before that, there was a long stretch of receivers that went to the Raiders in free agency and didn't do anything. Randy Moss is one of them. Who's the other guy I'm thinking of? Jerry Rice was at the end of his career, so you knew he wasn't going to be as productive as he was in San Francisco. I just had another receiver in my head, and now I just lost him, that went to the Raiders and did absolutely nothing after he went there. And he was a productive player. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The point I was trying to make was that was highway robbery.
And Randy Moss
for a fourth.
Yeah, that's
the Raiders
money.
So dumb. Because we paid for that. We paid for that. The Bills in this division having to endure that guy. Do you remember the Sunday night game here, 56-10, when he had four touchdowns in the first half? Thanks a lot, Raiders.
I remember that.
God, so frustrating. Really, really frustrating. There is an interesting report coming out of Miami, Steve, that Tua Tagovailoa remains in concussion protocol and as a result will not be participating in any Pro Bowl activities. He was named a first alternate for the AFC team. But according to ESPN.com's Marcel Louis-Jacques, it's a deliberate progression through concussion protocol. It's not because of any setback. So let's just say, so here we are, conference championship weekend. Still in the protocol. Still in the protocol.
Aaron Rodgers to Miami. That guy was, he might still be enamored.
Stephen Ross will still be after Brady.
Right, he may still be enamored with Brady, you know. I don't know.
Here's another interesting development. So Shea Tierney, who was an offensive assistant here under Brian Daboll on the offensive side of the ball, went with Brian Daboll to the New York Giants, where he was promoted to a quarterback coaching position. We all know the good year that Daniel Jones had for the Giants. Shea Tierney apparently is getting some credit for that. He is going to interview with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for their vacant offensive coordinator position. Tierney has worked with Daboll since his days at Alabama as the OC. And then he came up to Buffalo with him from Alabama. Now he's in New York with him at the Giants as the quarterback's coach. He is getting interviewed in Tampa for their vacant OC job after Byron Leftwich was fired down there. So we'll see how that goes. Good luck to Shea. He was a good guy when he was here. So isn't it amazing how some of these young assistants catch fire and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, that guy, he went from offensive assistant to quarterback's coach to offensive coordinator in three seasons. That's an impressive ascent, you know, as an assistant coach in this
league.
And it happens fast for some people.
It happens when you get a guy that he does work with, he works with on the same staff with Josh Allen, then he works on the same staff where they get the most out of a guy like Daniel Jones, and he starts getting some credit, and some of the guys above him start saying, yeah, this is the guy. Yeah, it happens fast, particularly when you do it with different entity, different bill, like Bills, then the Giants. Yeah, I mean, I see it happening, but you know, these hiring cycles are always fraught with biases and preconceived notions, so you kind of got to watch out for that. But you know, sometimes these teams decide who they're going to hire next before they even fire the guy that's on the staff now. And they still got to go through the process.
We are going to take a break here, but a reminder that the OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open. You can give us a call at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board if you want to do it that way, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. We will get to your calls and your tweet sheet comments next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live on a Friday, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The number to get on board is an OBL Fan Friday mailbag. Any questions on the Bills, the league at large, fire away. We'll get to the tweet sheet in a second. First, we go to the phones, and leading us off today is Larry in Williamsville. What do you got for us, Larry, on One Bills Live?
Three things, guys. First of all, last year, the previous season, Gabe Davis caught four consecutive TDs, and then he also caught the first touchdown of this past season. And I never heard anything whether or not that was an NFL or Bills record catching five consecutive touchdown passes. So I didn't know if you've heard something or would look into that, because I was curious about that. Secondly, concerning the new stadium, it kind of bothers me that they're changing the setup of the stadium to a north-south direction instead of the current east-west direction. And the reason I question that is, in a north-south direction, the sun is going to be directly into the receiver's eyes when they're running north, looking back to the south. And that doesn't happen now in the current stadium. And I wondered if Ron Rekua or any of the people looking at the new stadium have even considered that, or they've gone over there with the receivers and thrown passes to see if the sun might affect the play of the game. And finally, I'm thinking that since each team every other year now gets a ninth home game, I'm wondering if, instead of just giving teams the ninth home game, if the league might consider changing that to the team's record for the previous year. So the teams with the 16 best records would then get the extra home game. So in the last game of the season, it's a division game, you might have more to play for because you might be able to get an extra home game because your record was in the top 16. That's it, guys.
All right. Thanks, Larry. Long list there. We'll try to get to each and every one of them. As for the Gabe Davis, whether that's a record or not, we'll have to check. Very often, records are kept regular season and postseason, and they're separate. And what you're proposing would bridge those two things, postseason from the previous year to first game of the regular season the next year. So that might be a little tough to find, but we'll do some digging and see if we can't get an answer for you. Second thing was regarding the stadium alignment.
Yes, they have done all those. They know exactly what it's going to look like, I would imagine. I would be shocked if they didn't put a lot of thought into the angle of the stadium.
And I think the other thing to consider, too, is this is not going to be a stadium that's built half below ground, as the lower bowl is in the existing stadium. This is going to be all above ground for the most part. And I think the outer shell of the stadium is going to be significantly higher. And we also know that 65% of the seats are going to be covered. So there's going to be a larger canopy, which would limit the amount of sunlight coming into the stadium as well. So whether or not that's enough to keep the sun out of players' eyes, I'm not going to pretend to know that. But I would like to think that every T has been crossed and every I has been dotted.
There is
no perfect stadium out there, but I think they've done everything in their power to make sure it is as close to that.
As I was reminded today, it doesn't matter anyway because the sun doesn't shine in Buffalo.
That's right. We've got three sunny days in the last month. So there you go.
I'm teasing. But I know. Man, oh, man.
The thing about the ninth home game and giving a reward for the ninth home game, it's interesting.
I like it.
I know that what the league has done to foster more competitive games at the end of the regular season is to cram division games down there at the end of the schedule. So you're usually jockeying for position in your division. You need to win those games instead of some of the throwaway games with players sitting, starters resting, when they have playoff seeds locked up and the like, as we saw in recent years prior to that schedule change. I suppose a reward system could help in that vein as well if you wanted to go that route. I'm not convinced the league would do that only because the schedule on the surface is rotational in nature, and that ninth home game is also rotational. So knowing that more often than not it's conference-based in terms of who hosts and who's away, because you're basically playing an interconference game for that ninth home game. For the Bills, that'll be the Tampa game. I don't know if they go there. I like the idea. I just don't know if they feel it's necessary.
Yeah, it'd be hard to get it done. I mean, there'd be nine teams at 8-9 or better in the AFC. Well, I see eight teams that are 9-8 or better, and there are eight teams that are 9-8 or better in the NFC. So it would be a line of demarcation this year. The nine win teams in both conferences would be the ones who get the extra home game.
I think that the teams at the bottom would consider that a penalty.
Yeah.
And they would then say, how are we expected to get better if we can't get that extra home game in the first place? I think there would be a
or it's
there would be complaints on that.
Or there would be more incentive to get better.
Well, right, but part of getting better is a perceived home field advantage. You know, it makes it easier to win a football game.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
I don't hate the idea. I just think it's a slippery slope, and I think you'll get enough pushback where it wouldn't happen.
I don't know. I like it. I do like it. I think it's great. It might get skewed some years where the AFC has 10 teams and the NFC has 6. I don't know. You'd have to go back and look at different years.
I think it complicates how to schedule everything too, because next year it's the AFC getting the extra home game, right? Don't they switch it by conference? That's how they do it.
Right.
So I don't think they want to muddy the waters even more and make the schedule maker's job even harder.
If from last year, it would be teams that were, yeah, there were 10 teams in the AFC that were 9 wins or better, and there were 8 teams in the NFC that were 9 wins or better. So you'd have some tie-breaking to do there. Yeah. But that it seems to be it'd be pretty evenly split, at least in the last two years. 2020, kind of the same thing. There's 8 teams that have 10 wins and 6 teams that have 10 wins in the NFC.
Yeah, but it's just not going to fly because these other teams are going to be like, so we, because we're struggling right now and I don't have a franchise quarterback, I'm only going to host 8 home games the rest of my days. Like, what the hell? And I understand you say, well, just get better then. I see too much pushback on it.
It's just one game.
Yeah.
It's one game.
I know what you're saying, Steve.
That's an incentive.
I think there'll be enough teams complaining about it where it wouldn't.
It does give you some incentive. It widens
the incentive. I don't debate
the incentive.
It
widens the incentive at the end of the season when you got that it means something.
Even if you're not a playoff team.
Right.
No.
It conceivably could mean something.
Yeah. I love the incentive. That's why I think it's a nice idea.
I think you need to incentivize winning. That's all there is to it. Yeah. And that's just one more way to do it. I get it. And it does, and it is one place. It is kind of counterintuitive to what the NFL has always been. The good teams, they make it harder on the good teams, easier on the bad teams. Maybe we should do it the reverse. The worst teams.
No. Now you have people tanking to get an extra home game.
Right. Exactly.
That's the problem.
That's right.
Yeah. It's a slippery slope. It's a slippery slope.
I like the idea, though.
Yeah, it was creative. That's for sure.
Yeah,
definitely creative because I had not heard that before. So good on you. Let's get back to the phones, and we go to Jerry in Tonawanda next. What do you got for us, Jerry?
Well, I'm just wondering if the running game in the NFL has become something in the past. Over the last 4 or 5 years, it seems like. Not only the NFL, but the Bills are a pass-happy team, and I was just wondering if that's a portent of the future, or maybe it's just because they don't have any quality running backs anymore. Oh. So that's really what happened to the running game in the NFL.
It's obsolete.
It's already happened.
We're already there. Most of the top teams in the league throw it 60% of the time, throw it 60% of the time and run it 40% of the time.
If not more.
If not more than that. So, yes, you're right. Jerry, the running game is not as important as it once was. The running back position has been devalued across the league. Teams are vilified for taking a guy in the first round these days. If they do, he better be really, really good. I mean, really good. And then teams are, like the Giants, are forced to build things around a running back and struggle with an okay quarterback. So and Tennessee with Derrick Henry, they are really good. They were the one seed just a year ago, and they were one game and done in the playoffs. They couldn't win a game in the playoffs. So the running game has become, and I think particularly at the level the NFL is now with the quality of the defenses that are fielded, the running game is not so much about being big, physical, nasty defense, big, huge guys, although obviously it's important. It's run fits. They do it technically. Guys are in the right spot at the right time, and there's just no place to run. It's hard to do. unless you really have big, huge guys who can dominate. And those are hard to find. It's hard to put five of those guys on the field. So, the running game, it costs you too much to make it work consistently and really good. And if you spend your assets to get that done, you can't keep up on the scoreboard in too many games because the other team can sling it.
That's the main thing. The dawn of analytics proved definitively that passing the ball is far more efficient and caters more effectively to scoring more points and improving your win probability than a run play. It is significantly more efficient. Analytics proved that, and the rest of the league followed. And that's why we are already there. So it's not something, Jerry, that just happened. We've already been there for the last 5 to 8 years, and it's only going to get more and more that way more quarterbacks capable of running offenses and leading offenses becomes more prevalent.
There's a couple of things working on it, too, that made it get there. One, obviously, is the rules against how you can play defense.
Skewed towards the offense.
So it gives guys more opportunities to run free in the secondary. Two, pass rushing, protecting the quarterbacks is another one, of course. But three is the fact that back in the old days, I mean, you go back and look at Joe Namath, Steve Grogan, these guys in the 70s, they'd take a snap and they just turn around and they just backpedal out from behind center. They just backpedal and start looking around, right? And they drop back and they'd, sling it, and the guys are running all the way down the field and all. Then Bill Walsh came into this equation and ran that West Coast offense where Joe Montana would take three choreographed steps, turn, and boom, it's out. Jerry Rice catches it on a slant, catch and run. The passing became short, accurate, quick release, hard to sack the guy, impossible to defend. You give receivers different routes on the same call. They could either run inside or outside depending on where the defender is. They just run away from the defender, just say, get open. And that's really hard to defend. So it became more and more and more common for every quarterback to complete 2/3 of his passes. And when you do that on a 3-down series, it's a first down. So the game evolved very quickly. When you start getting quarterbacks, you can just, they take that 3-step drop or a 5-step drop, and hitch it and go. You hitch it and you let it go, and the guy's turning away from a defender, and it's easy throw. So, all that stuff coupled together, and I'm sorry, but the running game is a adios.
Yeah. It'll always be there. There'll be fewer and fewer 1,000-yard rushers because there's going to be more and more committee backfields. We see it here in Buffalo. Haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher in a while. We have to take a break, though. When we come back, more of your thoughts on the tweet sheet, questions from the OBL Friday fan mailbag next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Oh, snap. Snapdragon apples are now available. Fuel your game day adventures with Snapdragon apples, now available at Wegmans. Snapdragon apples, the official apple of your Buffalo Bills. It is an OBL fan mailbag Friday, and we go to the tweet sheet next, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. For question number one from Vince, how does Brandon Bean retool the O-line to protect Josh, provide an upgrade in the run game, and also add a weapon or two? Based on salary cap constraints, it seems like a tall task considering all the other needs this team has. Valid question, Vince. Valid question. I think the draft comes into play here. You need cheap labor at wide receiver and offensive line, and cheap labor is found in the draft where you pay guys on rookie contracts. And that's one way to do it. The other way, which we've seen Brandon Bean do before, Steve, is one-year contracts.
Yeah, they'll do it again. They did this last year. Both guards were different this year, coming into this year, than they were last year. They brought in
Greg Van Roten.
Van Roten, Kessenberry.
Roger Saffold.
Roger Saffold were three new additions.
Greg Manns was another guy. Manns is the guy they signed.
Also, Bates was new to the equation from a year ago, although he moved in and was there when Ike Butker got hurt. So you had all of that going on this last year as well, and they'll do that again. I said it, and I'm gone back and really looked at it, but I remember having these conversations at the end of last year. We knew that there was a number of guys that they were going to have to sign. You know, Milano. Was it Milano last year?
No. They released Feliciano, and they released Darrell Williams.
Right.
Which created even more holes.
Right. And then they were cap-constrained as well, and we thought, well, they're going to have to draft some people and have to do all this. And then they got it done. Not only did they get it done, they extended Josh Allen, and they signed Von Miller. Under the same circumstances that were kind of like they are right now. They need to retool their offensive line. So I'm fully confident they're going to rerun it, and maybe not with the same guys, but the same plan. And like I always say, if they get the right players, they'll be fine. But there are going to be some new players. Last year, it was hard to say goodbye to that team last year after that loss in Kansas City. It was really difficult to say goodbye to those guys because that was a great team, special team, fun way to end it, except that, you know, for the tragedy that was 13 seconds, all of that stuff. And it felt like – and we knew that they were going to have to make some significant changes. It's the exact same thing this year, except now you've got Von Miller and Josh Allen extended. You got all these other – you know, you're going to have to sign – now this year it might be Tremaine Edmonds. It might be Poyer. It might be somebody, you know what I mean? So all that stuff is on the table, and it's different names, same situation as they were in a year ago, and I imagine they're going to navigate it the exact same way.
Nick asks, I know the DeMar incident was a turning point, but I think an even bigger turning point was the bye week. After we beat Kansas City and went into the bye, we never looked the same again. What happened after that week that prevented us from playing complete games like we did in the beginning of the season? Well, one of the problems was Josh Allen, a week after that Packers game, injured his elbow. And as he told us in his season wrap-up press conference earlier this week, it really didn't feel good until the last two games that he played against Miami and Cincinnati. So that was a factor, number one. And I think it was evident, it was proven in the way that the Bills approached offense the next few weeks after that game against the Jets in Week 9. They went to a much more conservative short passing game, leaned on the run even more, to the point where there were two or three games where they had more rushing attempts than pass attempts. And if you noticed, and you got to the stadium early enough, Josh wasn't going out for warm-ups during that point in time. Didn't throw a single pass in warm-ups. And then would come out for the beginning of the game, take about 5 to 10 warm-up throws, and then play the game. So that was a major factor. The other major factor was injuries. You had him here, there, and everywhere on both sides of the ball, and it compromised the availability and depth of the roster. You know, people talk about losing Von Miller on Thanksgiving. You also lost Jordan Phillips, who I would argue is your best interior pass rusher. So you lost your best edge rusher and your best interior rusher, who, yeah, he was still playing, but he's playing with one arm. He had a torn rotator cuff. Guy had his arm in a harness every week. You can't play on the line with one arm. I mean, it's valiant effort that he did it, but he wasn't the same player. And, you know, those were all mitigating factors, I think.
To me, and you're right, Josh's elbow, the injuries were a huge problem. I would say even more so, the way it manifested itself. Here's what it looked and you can know, everybody says, yeah, the offensive line. No, it was one thing and one thing only that caused this offense to look like it was sputtering. One, turnovers.
Yeah, that red zone turnovers. That's
that
when they started,
it.
Too. Right after the bye week, the red zone turnovers started.
It was
You're
the
right.
turnovers. They fumbled it away, and Josh threw it to the other team, and they got tipped interception, all of that stuff. It was turnovers that did it. That was the Achilles heel that made this team look like it was stumbling. They would turn it around, and I said it. This team is so good. So you can talk about the offensive line getting killed at the line of scrimmage, the defense line, all the – they were so good, they were turning it over three times and going 4-1. In those games. You just don't do that in the NFL. Not in the NFL. This team was really good. The thing that caused them to sputter was something that is incredibly easy to fix. It was turnovers. Turnovers is what made this team sputter. They almost got beat by a horrible Patriots team in Week 18 because they turned it over. and they almost got beat by a Jet team when they turned it over in the playoff, or I mean the Dolphins team in the playoffs because they turned it over.
And they lost to a Jets team because they turned it over in week 9.
That's right. That is the absolute single biggest reason why this team sputtered.
And there was a stretch where Josh had 9 turnovers in a 5-week span, and 7 of them were in the red zone. And this team still finished 2nd in scoring. Think about that.
They're really good. And the turnovers is what, if they'd have cut them in half, not even got rid of all of them, just cut them in half, it's a very different conversation everybody's having.
We got to take a break here because when we come back, hour number 2 on a Friday can mean only one thing. Senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, will talk post-mortem Bills, but we'll also talk conference championship game matchups and where he sees the edges in each of those games on Sunday. Greg Cosell coming your way next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, here we are, hour number 2 on One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And you know what that means on a Friday. It means we're joined by senior producer from NFL Films, also co-host of ESPN's NFL Matchup Show. It is Greg Cosell joining us. Greg, how you doing? You ready for these conference championship games?
I believe I am, yeah. I'm sure in Philly they probably started tailgating about 4 days ago. So, I guess I'm ready.
Let's begin, though, with the playoff loss that the Bills suffered in the divisional round last week. And we know that the defense was just not with it in that game. Blown coverages on each of the first 2 touchdowns by Cincinnati. But what about Buffalo's offense? Why do you think they spun their wheels as much as they did?
It's an interesting question because in some ways you could argue that they didn't in some ways. I mean, I think they play the way that they played, Brownie. You know, we've talked at times throughout this season the fact that the O-line is probably needs an upgrade in certain areas. They don't really run the ball with any kind of volume or consistency. There have been games where the run game has been a factor, but it's not really the way in which they play. So it's really an offense that's built on the ability of Josh Allen to make plays. And it's kind of a tribute to him that they've been able to win so many games playing that way, because it's hard to play that way, to be honest, where you're expecting your quarterback just to do it every week. And I think, I was thinking about this since they lost that game. I think in some ways we became mesmerized by what Josh Allen did in the playoffs last year. Those 2 games were superhuman. They can't happen all the time, but they were so, so good that I think we started to believe, probably many of us, that this is just going to happen pretty regularly. And that's really hard. Let's say, for instance, that Josh had hit Diggs on 3rd and 10 late in the 2nd quarter off second reaction movement where he left the throw just a little bit wide. I'm sure you remember the play.
Right.
It's a play we've seen him make many times, correct?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
And he just missed it by, a foot or 2. If he makes that throw, it changes the whole game. And I'm not saying they win the game. No one knows what would have then happened, but that could have changed was that the drive they ended with any points
that
or
was the
no
first,
points?
There was no points, and I think it was the first drive of the game, and it was the first third
no, it was
down
late in the
game.
Second quarter.
Oh, late in the second
that was late
quarter.
Late in the second quarter. But the point is, in some ways, they played kind of Bills football, and they just missed some opportunities. Look, Davis, obviously, on that long throw going down the left sideline, that was in the second half. I know that for sure. He could have caught that ball, so in many ways, as I kind of watched that game and I went through it twice on that side of the ball, you could argue that they kind of played the way they normally play. And for whatever reason, it just didn't work in that game. Now that raises a larger question about whether they need to sort of change their approach offensively. And that's a discussion that, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott and others are going to have as they self-evaluate in this offseason.
Yeah, and that's kind of the follow-up question. I mean, they're number 2 in scoring.
Right.
And they did that through a season where Brian and I were just talking about, they turned it over like it was their job in the second half of the season.
Right.
And still managed to go on an 8-game winning streak. Why? I mean, if you're going to change something, just don't turn it over and keep going, right? I mean, that it seems crazy to change that formula.
Yeah, and that's the big question because, you know, clearly this was a team that, and you guys would know the record better, but going back to last year, Brownie, when they after they lost to Indianapolis last year, which was what, week 5 or 6, somewhere around there, give or take, I can't remember the exact week.
I think it was
week.
Second half of the season, actually.
Yeah, I think it was November 11th, yeah. It's like week 10.
So their record going back to that game has been pretty outstanding. So
25-5.
Yeah, you make a pretty good point, you know, but then you play a playoff game. I guess what I'm saying is they've won a lot of games, and I don't know the answer to this. I'm just trying to pose the questions, which I'm sure they're posing in there, you know, that'll be discussed in the building, is if you look at the way the team is structured, offensively in particular, it really is structured around the ability of one player to be great pretty consistently. And for the most part, he has been.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have watched a lot of football, as have I. You have to decide if that's a realistic approach to get to the big game, you know, because obviously that hasn't happened yet.
Right. That was November 21st, actually, week 11 last year with the Indianapolis. And since then.
That was the only time they got run out of the gym, as Brandon Bean said.
Right.
And since
right.
then, those last 7 games, well, 8, 9 games last year, and then moving into this year, they're like 25-5 over their last 30. And the losses
and, you know, even though, you know, everybody talked about how they got physically beaten this week. It was interesting because in the first half, the Bengals had 29 called passes and 12 called runs. It's just that the runs gained some yards, but it wasn't if the Bengals just came out and ran the ball. You know, they like I said, they had 29 called passes and 12 called runs in the first half.
Right.
Yeah. And there, I think, and Steve and I have talked about this a lot on the show, since the DeMar Hamlin situation, this team hasn't looked the same either. I think the emotional toll there compromised their play on the field also. To what degree exactly, we'll never know. But against the Bengals, they didn't even look like the team that we had watched for most of the season in our estimation. There just wasn't the want to. It just wasn't there. And even some of the players said, we just didn't have the energy that we normally have on the field.
And that's a great point.
Yeah.
I mean, none of us know how something like that, I mean, you're talking about a life and death situation. This is not just like a normal injury for a player that happens, that players accept in football. Everybody gets injured. This was a totally different situation, you know, and even through the course of the season, having to go to Detroit to play that game where, because of the snow, you know, and you could say these are excuses. Some might say that, but, you know, none of us can understand what they really dealt with, you know, during the season. And maybe they just were emotionally spent. Who knows the answer to that? No one does.
Two questions about two rookies going forward for this team. And then we'll move on to the conference title games. Khalil Shakir showed more and more as the season went on. His opportunities didn't increase to any great degree, but to some degree. What do you see for him maybe as a future in the slot? And then we heard Brandon Bean talking about how they may be moving Christian Benford to safety full time next year, knowing his skill set and being, you know, a 6'1" player in the secondary. What do you think about that prospect for those two players going forward?
Well, as you guys probably recall, when they drafted Shakir, I told you how much I liked his tape coming out of college, and I said that I thought he'd be some kind of factor this season. To be honest, it didn't quite work out the way I thought it would. I thought he'd be more of a factor, but it was clear as the season progressed, he did make some plays. And I think that he'd be a guy I'd seriously consider playing, you know, as a slot receiver next year. I think there's a lot more there to be developed. And I think he could be a good receiver. Bedford, I did not see him coming out of Villanova. So my first real look at him was playing corner for the Bills. But he is long. He's pretty athletic. I mean, clearly they want Elam to be the starting corner opposite White. So, and I think Elam has better traits overall than Benford. So if that's the case, if you like the player, which I think they do, because he, obviously he played well enough at corner through training camp and through the early part of the season that he was getting more snaps than Elam.
Right.
So, you know, if they like the player, you know, it might make perfect sense. I mean, you know, I know that the things I don't follow are contract status. Is are Poyer and Hyde going to be Bills next year, or is Poyer a free agent?
Poyer is a free agent. Hyde has a year left.
So Hyde is likely to be back. Poyer could well not be back. You know, again, we don't know how the organization sees. I mean, we know he's a really good player. The organization would say that, but there's obviously many factors that go into how much you pay a particular player. So it's possible Poyer could not be there.
Let's move on and talk about these games this weekend. 49ers at Philly. This looks like it's going to be like a 3-2 game, maybe. And, you know, low scoring slugfest. What do you see with San Francisco, Philly, and these two quarterbacks in particular?
I'm kind of fascinated by this game because Philly's offense has been a lot of fun to watch this year, you know, when Hurts has played and been healthy. His abilities as a runner really makes it difficult to defend that offense because he's in the gun on almost every play. So, you know, unless it's third and long, there's a run element, a designed run element that is there that you have to defend that really puts a burden on second level defenders. He's really improved as a passer. He can make throws from the pocket. They do a great job with design in their pass game. And I think with the two receivers, Smith and A.J. Brown, I think they're going to attack on the outside. And I'm not suggesting that the corners for the 49ers, Lenore and Ward, who've played well, I'm not suggesting they're weak players. But I think this defense is really, really strong down the middle. And I think that the Eagles, who as this season progressed, really started to throw more outside the numbers, I think you're going to see them look to attack there and see how that goes. They hit some vertical throws. Hurts has become a very good deep ball thrower. I think they're a tough offense to defend. Now, the Niners obviously have a very, very good defense. They have the best linebacker in the game in Fred Warner. They've got two really good nickel linebackers with Greenlaw. Obviously, we know about Bosa. So there's something inside me is thinking that the Eagles are going to score. When I say score, they're not going to put up 40, don't get me wrong, but I don't think they're going to put up 13. I think they're going to score some points.
Which path, that might answer this question that I had for you. We have two pretty formidable fronts here. We know that the Eagles led the league in sacks. We know San Francisco wasn't far behind. Which pass rush do you think has the better chance of being more effective on Sunday?
I think, Brownie, much of that will depend on situational football. You know, I think that the way both teams play in normal down and distance situations minimizes pass rush because the 49ers will play an awful lot out of 21 personnel with two backs, one tight end, and two wide receivers, and Juszczyk, the fullback, being one of those backs, and they are so multiple formationally out of that personnel package that that's difficult for defenses as well. So I think you're really getting into pass rush situations. I would think the Eagles would attack the right tackle, McGlinchey, and that's where Hassan Reddick lines up. You know, I would think that Nick Bosa would get some snaps against Jordan Mailata. So I think it really is situational. And then it comes down to, you know, Purdy has played well. He's not been quite as sharp the last 2 weeks, but he's played well clearly overall for a rookie quarterback. So that's a hard question to answer. I really believe that it'll come down. Look what happened last week with the Niners offense. Because their defense is so good, they could stay with the run game, but they really did not have the kind of pass game I think that they wanted to have. We're looking at a play that was obviously fluky. Kittle wasn't even part of the progression. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, Purdy has started to do a couple of things that he's going to have to be careful with. He's starting to retreat backwards when he faces pressure, and he's starting to move to his left. And both of those things, you know, can cause problems.
How good is Brock Purdy now, and what's his upside? I mean, obviously he's in almost the perfect situation for a young quarterback with a running game and a defense to protect him.
Yeah.
You know, great
and elite playmakers.
And elite playmakers around him. I mean, it's hard to imagine a better landing spot, but how good could Brock Purdy be?
You know, I think Purdy is what ultimately he is, and I don't think he'd be more than this. And when I say that, I don't mean this in a negative way at all. He would be a distributor and a high level executor of a well schemed offense who gives you some secondary action movement. That I think is what Brock Purdy is. And that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, I don't think we'd ever be talking about Brock Purdy in the conversation, you know, with Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Herbert, you know, probably even Jalen Hurts at this point in Hurts's career. I don't think we'd be talking about Purdy in that same way. But in a Kyle Shanahan offense, if you are a high level distributor of the football, then you are a really good player. And he gives them something Garoppolo couldn't give them, which is the play-action boot game, which Kyle Shanahan always wants to have, and some secondary action movement because he's got light athletic feet. So he could be a very efficient player in the context of that offense.
Flipping it over to the AFC title game, Greg, the one thing that I'm interested in are the problematic matchups for both defenses here based on the weapons that, you know, each of these offenses can throw out there on the field. Which defense do you feel has more problematic matchups to deal with in your estimation?
Well, I think that the Chiefs have more problematic matchups if you're talking one-on-one type matchups. And I think that the Bengals have their matchup issues would stem more from the scheme that the Chiefs run, because I think the Chiefs are very schematic, particularly in given situations.
Okay.
You know, we've seen that the Bengals, you know, everybody talks about rushing three and dropping eight. Okay. That in and of itself shouldn't pose a problem, but it's how they do that. I went back and looked at week 13 they played this year, back last year in the AFC Championship game. When they rush three and drop eight, it's really noticeable who the defensive end is that they drop. The large percentage of the time, that defensive end drops on the side of Kelce. And I think they do that because it immediately presents kind of a bracket situation on Kelce, and it takes Mahomes' eyes off of Kelce right away. Now, Mahomes is capable of doing a lot of things, obviously, but it takes his eyes off Kelce right away because it appears that there's two players who are going to be in position to defend him.
Right, knowing that, if you're Kansas City, does that – and they've done this a ton. I mean, they'll put Kelce everywhere.
They start throwing
him around and moving him and shifting him. And like everybody does, they've all got this – the ability to shift and motion and move guys around. Yep. Kansas City, I've seen them also go static. And what does go and – you know, go line up and move and go? What advantage does that give Kansas City? Because if they know – or maybe they have already anticipated who's going to match up with him in that down and distance. I don't know.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts I have. It wouldn't surprise me. And again, we don't know about Mahomes. Apparently, he practiced this week, you know. And so let's assume he's close. You know, he can't possibly be 100%, but let's assume he's relatively okay. It would not surprise me, Steve, to see them do some no-huddle tempo. And again, you don't have to snap the ball right away. But as you know, no huddle tempo. Look, you played in that kind of offense. Defenses can't do a lot of communication and pre-snap adjustment because they don't know when the ball is going to be snapped. And I think one of the things, and Brownie, you brought this up last week about Lou Anarumo, and you're so right, is he's so good with that kind of thing. And that might minimize how much he can do that if the Chiefs decide to, you know, go some no huddle.
Right, and it's all about getting first downs. You don't want to go no huddle, and 10 seconds are off the play clock, and you're already 1, 2, 3, and out.
Right.
That's the key thing. Plus, if you go no huddle, too, and I don't know, maybe the Chiefs have a way of doing this, it's really difficult to shift in motion out of no huddle.
Yeah, and I'm not sure they're necessarily worried about that. I think, you know, you made a good point about where they line up Kelce. It's very possible because Kelce can line up everywhere. You might see them split Kelce out a little more at times because then it becomes a little more difficult for someone from the inside to be able to bracket him or be involved in a double. Because then if you want to double him or bracket him, then you're dealing with a safety doing that more than likely. Could it be a linebacker? Yeah, but you have to show that. So, you know, this is going to be a really good chess match here because Kelce, he makes that pass game go, obviously, other than Mahomes. And you can't just let him, you know, be a big factor in the game.
Okay, so going from Anarumo to Spagnuolo now, back in the 2020 AFC title game with the Bills, Spagnuolo gave Allen fits because he would change the coverage with 5 seconds left on the play clock, and it wouldn't give Allen enough time to check his offensive play call, and he would get a bad look sometimes. How effective could that be against the Bengals offense, knowing how sometimes, at least to me, it seems like Burrow's where he's going with the football is predetermined with how fast he gets the ball out. Can that compromise some of that if he spins the dial late in the play clock?
Sure. And I think that was one of the things that did not happen week 13, Brownie, is that the Chiefs were a little static. They did not pressure much. They played a lot of coverage, and they really didn't change the picture a lot. I would expect them to do more of that, you know, just as the Bengals did this week against Josh Allen. Change the picture and make the quarterback work a little bit. One of the strengths of Burrow, and it's one of the reasons he's a great, great player, is he really knows where he's going with the ball before the ball is snapped. He's one of those guys. He plays that kind of game. And you like, and it won't happen every snap, of course, nothing happens every snap, but you like in certain situations to change the picture pre-snap to post-snap just to create a little bit of hesitation because they still have offensive line issues. And this is a very good pass rush group. They're among the league leaders in pressure of quarterbacks. So, you know, you have Chris Jones. He's a real tough handle. They got a kid named Michael Dana who's been a really big part of what they do, playing both D-tackle and D-end in pass rush situations. So this is, you know, and obviously they have Frank Clark. I think that that's a really important point. It would not surprise me if you see more of that from Spags this weekend.
You know, you talk about Spags and how, and also how Cincinnati has, with Lou Anarumo and all the things he does, which of these defenses do you think is a better matchup for the defense against which offense? I mean, which one of these defense has the upper hand compared to the other?
Wow.
Obviously, different matchups.
That's a question with a lot of variables. I think that anytime you're playing three wide receivers, the quality of Chase, Higgins, and Boyd, you potentially have issues. I think that, the Chiefs are playing, they're playing with rookie corners. When they go nickel, they play with two rookie corners, and they're good players, and McDuffie was a first-round pick, and I really loved his tape coming out of UW, but he's a rookie corner. So we'll see. Snead, they brought him back inside this past week, and I'm sure that had to do with the opponent, but he'd been playing outside in their nickel, and they brought McDuffie inside in weeks prior to that, so we'll see what they do this week. But anytime you're playing with two rookie corners against this receiver group, Steve, I think – I'm not saying it's a problem. There's ways to camouflage and compensate for it that Spags knows way better than I do. But those are three really good receivers.
Yeah. Greg, as always, thanks for the insight. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming on today. Enjoy those conference championship games this weekend.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, that's Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, joining us as he does on Fridays during the season. And sounds like he's leaning towards Cincinnati winning that football game. He's genuinely concerned about the two rookie corners for the Chiefs being out there in nickel personnel.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand why. It's a heck of a receiving core they got over there.
Yeah, and I don't know that they've got a – certainly the Chiefs' pass rush is quality, but I don't know that they've got a dominant enough pass rush to get home in time to – 2.5 seconds is what Burrow gets rid of. That's hard, man, to get back to the quarterback that fast. So I think – with those three wideouts, if Burrow picks the right guy, there's going to be somebody on every play that he's going
to
be able to
ball
to.
That's why I asked Greg that question that I did about Spagnuolo spinning the dial late in the play clock. He was doing that to Josh in the 2020 AFC title game, and it gave him fits because he didn't have the chance to change the play because the play clock was going to run out.
Right.
And he would just strategically time it where he'd tell his safeties, hey, spin the look on him with 5 seconds left on the play clock. He'll try to change the play, or he won't have time to do so and be worried he's not in the right play call. And it worked uncommonly well in that game, and it was a big lesson for Josh going forward. I wouldn't be surprised, because you got to do something to affect Burrow, and if he's getting it out that fast, your pass rush isn't getting home, even if somebody's coming clean.
That's right.
So you got to spin that wheel on him to at least make him pat the ball once.
Yeah, and you've got to it's all about indecision. The quarterback thinks he's got something. As he drops back and throws, he can't throw it there, and then he holds it. That's what the whole thing is about. you got to get to the guy, and you get to him because he's got the ball, still got the ball in his hands. Yeah. He can't. There's nobody to throw it to, or the guy he wants to throw it to isn't open because you've got him snapped off, and you know the third option may be open, but he can't get there in time. It's all about, and it all happens fast, and that's the good quarterbacks, man. They know it. They got that stuff down cold. They know where they're going to go with the football. You always hear quarterbacks talking about predetermining. Sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's bad. And usually it's bad because you got to play football. And when you start predetermining where you're going, any good coaching staff who watches film is going to know what you're seeing. And they're going to take it away or bait you into throwing someplace where you shouldn't throw. Yeah.
Break time for us here. When we come back, more of your questions from the OBL Friday fan mailbag answered by us here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Bills fans, Connect Life needs your help. During the month of January, every blood donor during this month will receive a pair of Bills branded socks. Connect Life is the only blood donation agency that keeps your donation here for patients in Western New York. To make your appointment, please go to connectlife.org today. Time is running out here in January. It's already the 27th, so get in there. Wanted to get back to your questions about the Bills, the NFL at large, both on Twitter and on the phones. So we go to the phones first, where Jerry in Buffalo is waiting. What do you got for us, Jerry? You're on One Bills Live. Jerry, are you there?
Jerry's asleep at the switch.
All right, I'll put Jerry on hold, and we'll check back with him
Jerry's
later.
Jerry's not there.
Jerry's asleep at the wheel.
Jerry is a ghost person.
It's
like a ghost runner when you were kids. There's a guy on second.
Yeah. We go to Rick in the OBL fan mailbag, and he says, if you two were the Bills GM and the NFL draft started today, what position would you be looking to fill for 2023? I know there's the best player available theory, and although Brandon Bean lives by that, he did take need over availability in 2018 with Josh and in 2022 with Elam. Need over availability? He's not taking Josh or Kair unless the value matches the spot where they're taking them. So don't mistake the fact that they were able to match need and value together and just say they went for need over availability. I don't know if that's necessarily true, so just be careful with that. In an ideal world, I'm getting a receiver in round one and a lineman in round two and then another lineman in round three. And then get me a power back in round four.
Okay.
Going all in on offense, Steve.
That's fine. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be imprisoned by that last game. They're going to go through free agency. They're going to sign some guys that they already have a chance to start for this team and compete. I want to look at the roster right before the draft. If the draft's today, okay, I'm with you. That's fine. But let's wait and see what the roster looks like after free agency and the trade deadline and all of that.
Yep.
And the draft. Well, before the draft.
Before the draft.
Let's see right up till the draft.
See how many holes are filled.
Let's just see.
And if what needs still exist, and then we can take it from there.
Because a lot of things change. So, like I said, we were talking yesterday about people doing mock drafts, and there are some of these teams that they're mocking people to. They don't even know the head coach is yet. So, that's a stretch to say the least.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to wait and take free agency first, then we'll think about the draft after the combine.
We got time. Yeah. Nate in the mailbag asks, Brownie, after calling a couple of Bills games, do you go back and listen to yourself? Absolutely. 100% yes. Much like players go back and review film, you go back and listen to yourself so you can kind of self-critique, find out where you can improve. That's why you do it. Why? You were going to say something?
No. Plus, of course, Twitter is always willing to lend help, a constructive hand.
Right. Well, NFL Films tweets that stuff out a lot, too. But, I go back and listen because sometimes I might not remember something and how I called it, and I might want to go back and listen to it and say, hey, did I get that right or something like that, or I want to listen to my tone. Did I go over a cliff and yell too loud? In some cases, yes. And you got to pull that back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting there at my desk and I hear Brownie calling game. He's over there listening to it. So, yeah, it's, if you're trying to get better, that's what you do. Yeah.
Rachel asks, as good as Bean and his staff have been, is it fair to question his ability to scout linemen? Besides maybe Rousseau, none of our defensive linemen drafted in rounds 1 and 2 have lived up to their draft position, and basically none of our offensive linemen picks have panned out. Well, I would say Dawkins has turned into a pretty nice left tackle. He even made a Pro Bowl last year. So That would be my response. Spencer Brown, you heard Brandon Bean explain his situation. And, you know, you can call it an excuse, whatever you want, but coming off a back surgery, he missed basically all of training camp, barely played in the preseason. So his first half of the season was going to be a work in progress. Dawson Knox didn't hit Pater till year 3. So maybe give Spencer Brown another year, see where it goes. Tommy Doyle lost his whole season due to an ACL injury in week 3 against Miami.
I think two. The Bills have been more successful signing free agent offensive linemen than drafting them.
Yeah. Wyatt Teller was a good offensive line pick, but.
Yeah, and you know what?
They moved him because they had veterans.
Was the timeline what I thought it was, where they traded him when they still had Richie Incognito and Eric Wood on the roster?
No.
It was after that?
After that, but
that's
they
amazing.
Had three veteran guards in the pipeline
right.
that were going to start ahead of him. In hindsight, Brandon Bean, to his credit, has said that was a mistake by him.
Yeah.
But there's a lineman that they drafted who was good. Pro Bowl guard.
Pro guard.
Yeah. And like I say all the time, any good GM will tell you, hitting on picks in the draft is a lot like a baseball player's batting average. If you can bat 300, you're doing pretty well. If you bat 400, you are in rare air in terms of getting hits, like bona fide starters in the draft. If you bat 400 in draft class, you are killing it, because that's the inexact science that it is.
Yeah, you want to got to hit on those. You need to hit on them, and the more you hit on, the better it is, and it's exponential. The more starters you get out of your drafts, that you can go back and look at it. I mean, the Seattle Seahawks went to 2 Super Bowls because they got 4 starters in 2 consecutive drafts. 4, not 7. They got 4 guys in 1 year, starters in that year, and then the next year they got 4 more.
And they were championship caliber defense for years.
And yeah, and they went 2 and won a Super Bowl, and went 2 and threw an interception on the goal line in another Super Bowl
that they should have won
to lose it.
Yeah. Let's check in one more time, see if Jerry in Buffalo is ready this time. What do you got for us, Jerry? You're on One Bills Live.
Yes, sir. I am here. I am here this time. I was here earlier, but something happened.
Okay.
In any event, thank you, Brownie and Steve. I want to thank you guys just for being there, just for hearing everyone out and letting Bills fans let our stuff out. Oh, by the way, you guys were some of the most awesome gear. I just want to let you know that. But I only have one question for you. And that is, I have to build it up a little bit here first. I think that Terry and Kim should strongly look at people like Cliff Kingsbury, Byron Leftwich, maybe any disciple of Mike Holmgren. Because, I mean, and I know Steve's going to say that that's a changeover in the first year. But, I mean, Doug Peterson did it. Lincoln Riley did it. So it's possible to change the offense in 1 year and still be productive. And the only question I have for both of you guys is, when was the last time you said, boy, that was a great play call? Not a great play by Josh Allen, but that was a great play call. When was the last time you said that? That is all I have to say. Thank you, guys.
All right, Jerry. Thanks for the call. First and foremost, I don't anticipate a change there based on what Brandon Bean said earlier this week. When he was asked about Ken Dorsey, he talked about how he did a lot of good things in his first year, which I think he did. This is a guy that was doing it at this level for the first time ever. He was literally learning on the fly and had to inherit an offense that was a top 5 offense and kept it there. It was an offense that finished 2nd in total offense, 2nd in scoring. They were the only offense in football that converted more than 50% of their third downs, number 1 in the league. And they were top 10 in red zone touchdown efficiency. They were 9th.
So what do you want to change?
So I don't know what you want to change. for change sake and hope the next guy can do better. Like, that's, to me, that might be a bigger risk. So I think, and truth be told, I think Dorsey's going to be even better next year. And look, you can argue, Jerry, when was the last time you said, wow, what a great play call? I don't know how anybody could say that on any play, because you don't know what the play call is. Like, with all the off-script plays that Josh makes, there are great play calls that never see the light of day because Josh ad-libs and does something on his own. And that's great that Josh can do that. But everybody gets on Dorsey all the time for having all these downfield shots and where are the checkdowns and where are the underneath options. I got news for you. There are plenty of them on every play. Josh sometimes chooses not to utilize those. You can't blame the OC for that.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why you want to change the offense. I'll say it again. The thing that made this offense look like it sputtered was because they were getting intercepted and turning the football over. They turned it over too much.
27.
That's not a problem with the scheme. That's a problem with the players. Now you can say, hey, Josh was trying to make too many hero throws and all that. Listen, you go back and look. Listen, that's on the players. That ain't on the coaches. That's not on the scheme. This offense scored more points this year than that great offense they had last year. They scored more points this year per game. It was almost identical, but it was the same. They're not going to change the offense. No. No.
Yeah, and Brandon Bean basically said, we've got to support Ken Dorsey in year two to be even better. So that leads me to believe he's going to be here. We got to take a break here. We got one final segment. We'll try to take a couple more questions in that segment here on an OBL Fan Mailbag Friday on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, back here on a Friday on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and we're going to squeeze in one more phone call, and it's Nick in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Nick?
Hi, how's it going?
Good, good.
I just wanted to see what you guys would think about the Bills bringing back Singletary on a cheap one-year deal and running a two-running-back formation like the Cowboys do with Zeke and Pollard.
There were times where they ran a pony package this year. Not often. We saw it, I think, most frequently against the Patriots in the first matchup. They ran it 13 times, and I think they threw out of it like 9 times, which was kind of interesting, to say the least. But I think Singletary is a question mark, and as you propose it, Nick, I don't see him coming back on a one-year deal. I think Devin Singletary knows this is his second contract. He's going to look to make as much money as he can, and understandably so, because running backs' shelf lives in this league are very short. He's 24, and he knows this is his big kick at a big money contract if he can find it somewhere. Now, I'm not saying he can, but I think he's going to look before he takes a one-year deal anywhere, including here.
I think you're also taking it for granted that doing a pony package with Cook, I presume, James Cook and Devin Singletary, you think that would be some sort of a magic elixir to make this team run it better, throw it better. Somehow that would change them or what they do, and I don't think it would. It just bring more defenders into the box, and, you know, it changes the equation in different ways. So I don't know. No, if they couldn't make it work this year, why would they make it work next year? And I'm for one, yeah, certainly they'll try it, and they did try it, like Brownie said. They gave it a little shot. But, you know, this is an offense that they did a lot of different things with a lot of different personnel. Bobby Hart was a big part of what they did. You always heard his name being called out because he was an eligible receiver coming in. They tried a lot of different things, and they went with what would work in any given week, depending on the matchup. They won 13 games to 14 games doing it, and they were really tough to beat. And they scored more points than anybody except one team in the National Football League. So I don't think they need to change too much.
Yeah, and I'm not.
They're going to keep doing what they did. And
yeah.
The offense may look differently next year because of who they sign in free agency and what offensive linemen they have.
Right. I think, as Coach McDermott says all the time, it starts up front. And I think that's where we're going to see more changes than we will even in the offensive backfield going forward. That's the end of this week's edition of One Bills Live. Steve and I will catch you on Monday at 1. We'll see you then.